So let's dive into the specifics of the week of this past week, guys. So we're going to dive into not just this past weekend, but since you guys had your last recruiting hour, Notre Dame has hosted a midweek visitors and then a weekend visitor. So we'll talk about all of them. And Ryan, we'll start things off with, let's go with the midweek visitor. So the position that I would say is most important to close on, in my opinion, on there's two now. There was one, but now there's two, because now safety becomes far more important with what's going on there. But the other one's receiver. Notre Dame has two receivers committed right now in Elijah Burris and Jerome Bettis Jr. We believe they're going to take at least two more, potentially three more. And there's there's basically four guys on the board. And over the last week, all four of those guys visited. Well, two of them came on campus starting on Tuesday, Ryan, and stayed for 3 days, and things went incredibly well. Let's start off with Dylan Robinson from Bonita High School out in California, Ryan, a guy that has flown under the radar as a recruit, but also as sort of the Notre Dame interest. I feel like he's not getting a ton of buzz because he's kind of was a late offer, and and everybody's been kind of focused on some other guys, but this is a guy that Notre Dame has made up a lot of ground with in a very short period of time, Ryan. And this visit weekend was going to be huge. So what's the latest? What did you hear? Obviously, if you're on the board, you got his intel piece on this, but let's kind of discuss, you know, what kind of move Notre Dame was able to make with Dylan Robinson.
Yeah, I mean, Sean, we've been talking about this one. It's been kind of a weird recruitment for Dylan Robinson, just in the simple fact of he's 6'2", 190 pounds. He reports a 4'4", high 4'4", in the 40, like 4'4", 7 to 4'4", 9, somewhere in that ballpark. He's ran that apparently a couple times over the last year or so at camps. And he's a star, not only a wide receiver, but he also plays cornerback. He can project to safety. He can project all over the place, which is a very interesting conversation. Obviously, Notre Dame sees him on the offensive side of the football. From this past week visit, the two and a half days that he spent there, basically where we were going in was Notre Dame was in a good spot going into this, in the simple fact of the family values that the Robinsons bring to the table, I think are very important to both Dylan and everyone around him, his support system that we talk about. High academic kid, spiritual. Really, like, one of the big things that he's trying to find in a school, in a program, is obviously the development on the field, but he's also trying to find development as a person and as a student. Like, he wants all-around development, which is what he's talked about. And I think going into that visit, you felt good about Notre Dame with Dylan Robinson, where things were trending, because they, on paper, bring all the values that the kid's looking for. Like, every single part of what they're looking for, they bring to the table. Now, getting him on campus, though, you see it now, right? Like, you were around Deuce Knight, who came in a couple days early for his official visit, obviously coming this past weekend, got to talk with him, got to see him. You also got to be around the coaches and the players on the team. But I think that the real thing is that talking to admissions and the advisors and everything that goes around being a student athlete at the University of Notre Dame, you also got to sit down and he talked about being able to sit down with the offensive coaching staff, Mike Brown and Mike Denbrock, and they showed him, how do I fit in this offense? Like, where do you see me? And they see him as a downfield threat, a guy that could win outside the numbers with that size, length, and athleticism combination, and certainly a type of receiver that Notre Dame needs more and more of as they get deeper into the Marcus Freeman tenure. So I think actualizing everything that he was hearing from Notre Dame in person was massive for Dylan Robinson. And I said this coming out of it, he was supposed to have a visit to Kansas this past weekend. I'm actually trying to figure out even if he took that visit, because I haven't seen anything about that out there, but I'll have more on that later potentially. But the last big hurdle now coming out of that visit is UCLA is next weekend. And I would say that out of the schools that he's taking official visits to, UCLA is probably the biggest threat right now, because they are the California pipe, you know, they're the California team. They're a school that he obviously has been on him a lot longer than Notre Dame has. It's the hometown feel type of thing, right? But I think when you kind of look at where he's been linked to, Washington, Kansas, Notre Dame, like, clearly staying at home is not the number one priority for Dylan Robinson. So I think Notre Dame, coming out of this visit, they've separated themselves. Like, if you told me today who is the leader for Dylan Robinson, I would say it's pretty firmly Notre Dame right now, if he's a guy that they want and the guy that they're patient for. Because the minute that he finishes the UCLA visit, he told me decision-making time. Like, yeah. I'm done. I want to be done this process. I would expect maybe sometime in July there will be a decision that would be firmly on the table. And I think Notre Dame has positioned themselves to be the absolute leader for Dylan Robinson in the end.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into some serious cash. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. We are the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You heard it. 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with NBA, NHL, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. It is so easy to use. All you have to do is download the app in the App Store or Google Play Store, sign up, add some funds, and you're in. Then you just find your favorite player and decide more or less on the suggested stat. It really is that easy. The night I joined, I picked Hannah Hidalgo to have more than 14 points, Maddie Westbeld to have less than 10 rebounds, and Marcus Burton to have more than 18 points. And guess what? I hit on all three. Bing, bang, boom, baby. Money in my pocket. It was just that easy. Download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Hey, Sean, obviously California doesn't produce quite as many guys for Notre Dame as it used to. I think the staff has made a concerted effort the last couple of years of kind of getting back to getting more impact players from the area. And I think this is the kind of kid that would be some of that. He's from a very good program. Obviously, Noah McHale's a teammate of his as well. Notre Dame needs to be able to still have a foothold in California. And there's two kids, obviously, on the board left that are from California kids. I think this would not only, if they're able to close on him, which Ryan talked about, it's not only important at the receiver position, Sean, but I think it also is just going to be another sort of notch in the belt to say, hey, we got to make sure we're maintaining that foothold in the state of California.
Yeah, and I think going to your point, I love Notre Dame and the way this staff under Marcus Freeman approaches recruiting and have done so. And the one thing we hear is truth, integrity, parents love what they present, what they see. And when you get that, I feel like at a place like Notre Dame, you kind of smoke out the posers. And we don't even have to go into that. I think we've had multiple young men kind of be shown up and exposed as posers or guys that just want to use Notre Dame as a holding spot. And when you operate the way Notre Dame operates, you smoke those guys out. Because ultimately, you don't want those type of guys in your recruiting classes. And Dylan Robinson doesn't represent that. I believe that's why he got to campus and he started to fall in love. Even though it was quick, and you just mentioned his top two programs, both of those are programs for different reasons that bring something new and fresh to his recruiting. I mean, Deshaun Foster is fresh. He's trying to build UCLA back up to what it was when he was there with Cade McNown. But, you know, that's an offer, like you said, is local. But the staff is pretty fresh. Some of the staff are some guys that he's familiar with, and that's a connection. But there's another connection to the values that represent Dylan Robinson and what he's looking for that is representative of what Notre Dame has to offer. So you talk about two things in his recruitment that he loves, both sides, and it's going to be someone that's fresh and new outside of the fact that UCLA has been on him a little bit longer. Is going to be fresh and new staffs really coming out of at him. And I want to point this out and allow you guys to jump in on it. I don't think people realize the transition, because transition is tough just in general in life. All of us have been through it. Some of us might be going through it in different areas in life. But when you're in transition, everything is new. It's unknown. There are variables. it can be a little scary from a recruiting standpoint. Look, they lose a safety coach. Transition. Mike Nickens is now over the entire defensive backfield, right? We believe that's a positive in recruiting. Some might believe that. It's even a positive in coaching. That's debatable. We go to the offensive side of the ball. You can say what you want to say. You have Deuce Knight, but then you have a new offensive coordinator coming in, and that's a transition. Then you have a new wide receiver coach coming in, and that's another transition. So I don't know if people realize what they've been able to do with this class, keeping things intact with multiple transitions happening. And then those coaches were able, I think it really is what they've laid as a groundwork and foundation under Marcus Freeman in the recruiting world that's helped even during times of transition, that these coaches have been able to come in, hit the ground running, build relationships. And the wide receiver position is a position that a lot of people in the chat even talked about, maybe lagging behind a little bit. But I think Mike Brown has shown himself worthy of keeping up a little bit. Even when we look at the evaluation, some early evaluations, we might have felt like, now we see the evaluation of a Tanuke Hines later on, the evaluation of a Dylan Robinson later on, and Notre Dame being right there with Meadows, right? Because they could have fallen off. And Ryan, maybe you got a couple of vibes a little bit ago that, man, they might be falling behind a little bit. But Mike Brown has proven himself that, hey, I can keep up with Marcus Freeman. I can keep up with the other guys that are doing a great job. And I like seeing that, even though they might not end up with all the guys at that position, the vibe that's being built collectively as a staff and the way they approach things as a staff, like no one is really left out on an island, you know, when it comes to recruiting at Notre Dame. I love it. I absolutely love it, and I think they made a great impression on Dylan Robinson a long time ago, and then they raised the ante this weekend. So I'm right there with you, Double R. I love where they sit.
Well, one thing that's – obviously there's been a lot of transition underneath the boss man and the GM. Like, but that continuity allows it all to work.
Yeah.
Okay, here's the standard, right? The standard is the standard. You're here now. You got to do it. The other thing too is when you look at it, one thing that's I think helped Notre Dame a little bit this offseason is Notre Dame's not even close to the only program going through a major transition. I mean, the defending champs are, the defending national runners up are, one of the other teams, Bama, that's in the national championship in the fall. I mean, three of the four teams that are in the college football playoff last year have brand new head coaches. You know, Notre Dame still has that. Ohio State's going through a big change. You know, there's a lot of programs. USC overhauled their entire defensive staff. UCLA has a brand new head coach. So this has been an incredibly busy offseason from that standpoint. And so that certainly Notre Dame has helped that. Ryan, also we talked about the importance of going out to California to get a kid, but also Ryan, when you have really good players in your state, you need to be able to make a strong impression there. Another guy that Notre Dame got in on a lot later is John Anthony Hall. Very talented player, had over 1,000 yards last year at Fishers High School. He visited this past weekend as well, Ryan, and Notre Dame is, again, the theme with the first two kids. Get in late, you got to make up a lot of ground in a hurry.
Right.
And it sounds like they did just that, Ryan, during his midweek visit as well.
Yeah, it was a big one for John Anthony Hall out of Fishers. So he's a really interesting kid. Me and Sean obviously interviewed him before that visit, Sean. And I mean, whether he ends up with Notre Dame or not, he is a Notre Dame kid, like first and foremost, right? I mean, he's a 3.8 GPA kid. He's a kid that also, you know, he identifies with his Indiana roots, even though he's kind of been all over the place a little bit, right? And three sports star for Fishers, a kid that's a 23 plus foot long jumper, which is a very good number for a high school junior. He's also a dang good basketball player for Fishers as well. Seems like, and Sean, you would know a little bit more than me probably, but Fishers seems like they have a pretty good basketball program, kind of an ascending one, if nothing else, right? So John Anthony Hall, very interesting talent, and he's ranked very high. I know 247 Sports has him ranked as the number 52 overall player. There's another that has him in the 200s, and then two others that have him as a three-star. We've talked about it. He's probably somewhere in between the 200-something ranking and the 52 ranking, right? He's probably closer to 150 than he is a 52 player, but regardless, very talented. A kid that didn't really take football that seriously his first 2 years, then he got his first offer from, what was it, Akron, right? And then he was kind of like, oh, I can actually maybe be something in football. And then he has the 69 receptions for over 1,000 yards last year and really had a breakout year for Fishers. Extremely interesting player because He has a offer extended to him on May 31st, and he's on campus less than 2 weeks after that, right? So obviously Notre Dame is a brand that he understands as an in-state kid, and he got to campus and got to spend a lot of time with Deuce Knight, as I talked about with Dylan Robinson as well. I'll phrase it quite simply like this. I think that Notre Dame should be viewed at as the very firm, let's say, they are a team that will be the leader for John Anthony Hall down the stretch if they choose that that's a player that they want in this class, right? That's what it's all going to come down to is there's four guys on the board. There's potentially three spots available, right? So that does mean that there's one guy that could be, quote unquote, the odd man out or not a part of the class ultimately. If Notre Dame has that third spot or has a spot for John Anthony Hall and he's a guy they want, I think that they would have a very good chance at John Anthony Hall. And a big part of that is obviously being able to develop that relationship in person last week.
That's a big thing, Ryan, is there's four receivers on the board. I mean, we'll see if Malik Clark visits or not. He's highly unlikely to be a guy that's going to end up at Notre Dame. Of the four kids, they're not going to take all four. They can't take all four. They don't have room. So somebody's going to have to kind of not be there. Is it someone who's not there by choice, or does the staff have to make a choice? That's going to be an interesting thing. And I think there's a greater chance that the staff may be forced into that situation now based on how this past week go. We'll see. I mean, there's a lot of kids have visits left. You know, I know John Anthony Hall has a couple of visits left. Dylan Robinson has the big visit left, obviously. I think Tanuk is done. I think
Tanuk has one Baylor more. Next weekend.
Baylor,
Baylor next
not
weekend.
Worried yep. about Baylor. The USC in Texas is done. Okay. I'm more worried about UCLA with Dylan Robinson than I am Baylor with Tanuk Hines. Maybe that's wrong of me, but I'm just not concerned about it.
But man, they're going to be showing highlights of KJ Wright all day, man. I don't know what you're talking about.
Real quick, who on this staff was here for that? Oh, none of you? Okay, thanks, guys. I'm going to commit.
He doesn't have to know that. He doesn't have to know that.
But obviously, receivers a big one, Ryan, but it wasn't just receivers. It was only receivers on campus this weekend as far as the non-committed kids. But during the middle of the week, there was a non-receiver on campus that is a very, very, very important recruit for Notre Dame, very well known amongst Notre Dame fans, and especially Irish Breakdown fans, and that's Jadon Blair. Yeah. Obviously, this was Notre Dame's chance to kind of seal the deal, finalize it as much as they could. There's still work to be done. He's got visits coming up, but sounds like Notre Dame did a phenomenal job on that one, Ryan.
Yeah, it was expected, obviously. So Jadon just obviously spent some time in Michigan. He's got Florida State left, and he's got Penn State left, and Penn State's kind of viewed as one of the biggest contenders for Jadon, potentially. I'll say it like this. Things have been trending in Notre Dame's direction with Jadon Blair for a long time. Obviously, we're talking about a 6'4" plus 190-pound safety who I actually just had a conversation with his head coach over at Mount Tabor, and I'll have a little bit of an interview on that, just kind of talking about what he brings to the field. But this is a young man that whether he is playing from depth, playing in the box, coming down to the slot against bigger bodies, I mean, his kid can do a little bit of everything. He even plays wide receiver for Mount Tabor and is pretty good on the offensive side of football. Former quarterback as well. They actually thought he was going to be a quarterback early in his Mount Tabor career, but ends up being a defensive stalwart for them. And I'll say this, Notre Dame has been high on Jadon for a long time. Jadon has reciprocated that interest for the last several months. They've been a main contender for him. I know that the family is also very Notre Dame advocate. Like they definitely like Notre Dame as well, which I think is big for him. At the end of the day, Notre Dame has done everything right in this recruitment, in my opinion, up until this point. They've been patient. They have also been continuous and consistent throughout. I mean, when I talked to him before his visit to Notre Dame, he had talked about he was hearing from at least one staff member, at least one, every single day. So the consistency is there. The effort is there. There was a little bit of uneasiness when Chris O'Leary left for the Chargers, and you were just kind of like, it's a little bit of a tough spot here. But then Mike Mickens comes in, and I mean, there are some, at least a source that I've talked to, that think that Mike Mickens has not only picked up where things left off, but like he might even have a better bond than what Coach O'Leary had with Jadon. Like it's possible there, right? So they were able to pick up where Chris O'Leary left off and just continue moving forward here. They are the favorite down the stretch. As long as you're able to outlast what Michigan did this past weekend, what Penn State's going to be able to show him at the end of the month, next weekend, I should say, I think that Notre Dame has a very good chance of solidifying things with Jadon heading towards his July 5th commitment date, which is his 17th birthday, which is still absolutely wild to say with what he put on film as a junior. But it's been the family aspect. It's been the relationship aspect. every time Jadon comes up to Notre Dame, which I think is three visits now over the past 6 months or something like that, they have just been able to show him that this is a place that he can be great. And that greatness continued, obviously, this past week.
Ryan, real quick. So he went to Michigan this past weekend, and I believe he has Penn State coming up this final weekend.
He's got Florida State 18th Florida to the 20th State. And then 21st to the 23rd, which is next weekend with Penn State.
Penn State. Okay, so that's his final three. He's been to South Carolina. He's been to Notre Dame. He's been to Michigan. And then he's going to take those last two. So obviously it's going to be about closing time. Sean, I mean, this is a unique kid. You know, I heard was somebody sent me a post about somebody that covers another team crying about, you know, well, Notre Dame can't sell Kyle Hamilton forever. And it's like, well, maybe not, but they're certainly doing it now. And I really hate lazy comps. I do. And I think that a lot of lazy comps are made to other players. But this is one where it's like you see it and you're like, yeah, I get it. Like that's a it fits. It fits. The Kyle Hamilton thing fits. And that's where Notre Dame's success, you're recruiting that position, has been important for Notre Dame in the last few years because they at least have something on the field to sell. You and I talk about it all the time. Got to have something to sell. Well, Xavier Watts, Kyle Hamilton, Harrison Smith, Lohi Gilman, they can sell that now. And a lot of people can't say, well, how are you going to fit a 6'4" kid into your defense? Well, Notre Dame say, we know how. And Marcus Freeman can pop in film of what he did in 2021 and do it.
You talk about sell. You can sell all you want. If the kids don't see it, they don't buy into it, it doesn't make a difference. You know, for that person that says they can't sell Kyle Hamilton, well, Ryan, I don't know the early projections, but I see a top 50 draft pick as safety next year, shaking the commissioner's hand, playing in the secondary for Notre Dame this year. Didn't he just win the Bronco Nagurski Award last year? Yeah, maybe, seeing him on the field will probably help with that position. But the prototype is Kyle Hamilton for Jadon Blair. And I think his recruitment has been one of the most pleasurable recruitments, right? Because we sit here and we try to figure out kids doing this and what does this mean? Or this kid said this, did this action add up to that? And as things have played out, Jadon and his father have been pretty honest.
And consistent.
Yeah. And I know it's our job to not kind of fall for the banana in the tailpipe every now and then and try to read things. But, you know, as things have played out, it's like, you know what? They have said what they meant and meant everything that they've said. So, you know, you let it play out and you feel really good about where they sit. Notre Dame, speaking of, when it comes to this young man and his parents, you talk about how important it is for parents. Notre Dame rarely loses the parent recruiting. It's very rare that the parents of top talented kids don't love Notre Dame. But Notre Dame has done this that they haven't been able to do in previous years with top talent at every position. There's three things that kids have to see. They have to see the ability to be a top draft pick. They have to see the ability to win a national championship. And Notre Dame can always show kids that you're going to get a quality education. Sure. Notre Dame hasn't been able to show all three and make kids really believe and see it. That's to see it. It's one thing to say you're going to win. We can win a championship. Top kids sit back and they look at Georgia and they look at Alabama and they look at other schools and they say, man, do I really have a chance to win a national championship here? But somehow, some way, this staff is getting top talented kids to say, I can actually see. Deuce Knight actually can see himself winning. I believe CJ Carr actually saw himself winning a national championship. I don't know if that can be said in previous years leading up to Marcus Freeman. So I think the three key things to getting top talent, I don't believe I just opened that door, but I already know where Brian
is. I'm not even going to say it, man. I'm not going to even say that when a head coach doesn't think you can win, how can recruits think you can win? So I'm not going to go there. I'm just going to kick it over to Ryan. Because I want to ask Ryan this. I want Ryan to speak on this. I'm being a good boy today, Sean. I am. It's twice you tried to team me up. It's twice. And I'm passing on both of them.
I just want to say, no, this has been one of the most pleasurable recruits and families to really cover in the end because, it has been nothing but honesty and transparency.
Ryan, I want to ask you this question, or I want to kick this topic over to you. For a while, we have told people that Jadon was a guy that Notre Dame wanted. Not so much that they needed him from a number standpoint. They wanted him because they need impact players. That's why you recruit him. Like, you're not trying to land Nathaniel Owusu-Boateng and Madden Foraimo because you need two linebackers, but because you need elite players, and they're elite players. Right. With what's going off Ivan Taylor, I think that changes the narrative about the Jadon Blair recruitment a little bit, because this now is a big one now. It's not only impact player, Ryan, but if for somehow you lose this one, you're now looking at a potential best safety class in 20 years. And then if they lose this one, it's like, okay, now you're starting over from scratch, essentially, right, with Ethan Long and then whatever comes next. So with the stuff going on with with Ivan Taylor, that security of, well, at least you have those two, is gone. Now Jadon becomes an absolute must get. Now maybe Ivan gets back in the fold. We'll discuss that here in a little bit. But right now, with the way things are trending, this makes the Jadon Blair recruitment even more important. And it now comes that it's now not just about we need, as looking at it from the Notre Dame coaching standpoint, you know, hey, we need to go out and get this elite player because we want to add more elite players. Now it's, dude, we got to meet our needs from a number standpoint now, and we may not be able to do that if we don't land this one. And that, I think, has changed very, very quickly, has sort of changed the narrative a little bit around the Jadon Blair recruitment as well.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt about it. I would even take it a step further, because not only are you just talking about the raw numbers, but I do think that when we're talking about 2025 recruits, there are going to be a lot of conversations about who could come in for the 2025 season and create an impact too, right? Because after this year, Xavier Watts is gone, right? After this year, Rod Hurd is gone. That's potentially your two starting safeties, maybe, right? And at least one, obviously, as an All-American coming back, but that might be your two starting safeties this year, potentially. And with that in the conversation, now you're talking about Adon, year three, cool. Ben Minnick, year three, we'll see. Luke Talich, year three, cool. Like, move, trending upward. And then Bronte Johnson and Tabron and all those guys. So the cupboard isn't bare necessarily, but there might possibly be, depending on what type of breakout an Adon Schuler has this year, there's going to be a question of, like, who's ready to take that next step. And I like Ethan Long a lot. I think Ethan Long is actually going to end up being a very good player for Notre Dame, but will it happen in 2025? I'm not sure about that. I think that Jadon Blair is a much easier bet to, I can find a role for that 6'4", 190-plus-pound safety year one. Like, I can find it, whether it's just, not just because the kid was a freshman All-American, but whether it's a Kyle Hamilton third safety role where now you're running a little more three safety sets and just trying to get him onto the field at some capacity, Jadon Blair not only fits the numbers need, but also he could be a kid that in 2025 could figure into a rotation, which I think is a big thing that you need in this class as well.
Well, to your point, Ryan, Kyle Hamilton was a two-year starter in Notre Dame. That's it. Yep. I mean, he was a sophomore junior starter, but he played a bunch as a freshman as part of that rotation with not only in the three-man looks with Jalen Elliott and Lohi Gilman, but then also would rotate in with those guys as well. And you had that veteran presence. It's not a given that this group, to your point, is not going to, it's not a given that they're going to have that in front of them. So you need at least one guy that can come in and, if not play right away, at the very least push guys to where, if he's not playing, it's because Luke Talich played so well. It's because Ben Minnick played so well. It's because Adon Schuler or Bronte or Kennedy Urlacher or Tabron Benny Powell played so well. So I think that's a great point. This is now, it was always an important recruitment from the standpoint of you need more elite talent. And Ryan and I, Ryan, you and I have both talked about this. Jadon, we grade out as a top 50 national recruit. Yep. Like, he's that kind of player. And I think, Sean, by the nodding of your head, you agree with that. I mean, this isn't just a good player this is an elite difference maker type of kid. You needed that anyway. Now that you need it just from a number standpoint, on top of that, potentially makes it even more important. Makes it even very more important. And if you get your numbers right in this class, Ryan, it also allows you to zero in on a smaller but more impactful group of guys in 2026.
Right.
And that's going to matter as well. So we'll see how they close. That wraps up the midweek visits, Ryan. And then, of course, a day afterwards, another group of guys show up. One very important position, as we said, receiver, vitally important. I want to start off with Ryan Tanook Hines, the kid from Texas, because this is the kid that we felt Notre Dame was in a pretty decent place with coming in, but the visit was going to be huge because he'd just been to USC and Texas the two previous weeks, two programs with a much, much better track record of producing impact wide receivers with those particular coaching staffs. So this visit was going to be huge for Notre Dame, Ryan. And I wrote an article on Sunday, yesterday, where I made the case that, look, they need three guys, in my opinion. And all these guys are impactful players. But I think his unique skill set, his specific skill set, might be the thing that this team needs the most from the guys on the board. That's just my opinion. But the fact is, Ryan, Ryan pointed out this to me, Sean, and all of you. But Ryan texted me, he goes, do you know that Tanuk Hines' junior track numbers are actually better than Micah Bell's junior track numbers? And I was like, wow. Because, like, I think didn't Micah Bell have, like, the fifth best 200-meter dash time in the country when he ran the 20.8? So, yep. Ryan, big weekend with Tanuk Hines. What's the feedback? What are you hearing about how things went with him?
Yeah. So gotten some feedback on both sides, both on the Hines side and both on the, you know, obviously more the Notre Dame side from a source perspective. And I mean, first and foremost, yes, he's more of what you need, right? You need like this combination of speed and physicality as well. Like Tanuk is not just a speed guy. Like he has shown the ability to win through contact and elevate for the football, but he's a 10.45 100 meter runner. He's a sub 21 200 runner, which is flying. I mean, he could legitimately run track for the 200 at least at a very, very high level in college. I mean, he ran like a 20.77, I think was his time as a junior. I mean, it is flying, dude. He is a fast, fast kid, and 10.45 is nothing to sniff at as well. If he was just a track guy, he is a high level track guy. There's no doubt about it. So you need that dynamic. So the big thing with Tanuk was Tanuk took his first visit to Notre Dame actually this offseason. It was an unofficial visit. And I remember he was actually offered in this past December as a Decaney guy. And I remember for the longest time, for several months, you're just like, he was just kind of an afterthought on the board because it's just like, is there interest there? Like, you just can't tell. I mean, because he's not, it doesn't seem like, you know, he's not prioritizing a visit. He's not coming up. And then he finally comes this spring. And when he got on campus, the interest really started, in my opinion, because for the first time, I think that he could really see himself there, right? See himself in the blue and gold, see himself as a student athlete, see himself as a part of this program. It was huge. Now, why this visit was essential and huge from this perspective is when guys have that feeling, one, you want them to have it again, right? Because that's going to determine if you're going to be able to land them. And I think for me, from everything that I've heard and all the feedback I've gotten, Tanuk had that feeling again. Because you do worry, Sean, first time, well, that's awesome. But then the second time doesn't feel as good, right? Where you're just like, oh man, maybe that's not the right fit. Maybe it's not. Tanuk had the right fit this past weekend. I think he really feels a part of this program. They are battling Texas, which I would say is probably the other big force. They're battling USC, which obviously is very high on the list as well. But I do think that Notre Dame has put themselves in a very good position to close this one out. There's a lot of positivity on the Notre Dame side, a lot of positivity on the Hines side. I was also told a nice tidbit, again, the support system aspect, Sean, is that, yes, Tanuk really likes Notre Dame now, but also was told that dad is a big proponent of Notre Dame as well, and that always matters.
And Brian talked about it earlier, right, being worried about Texas in this thing. And, of course, you know, schools like Texas, they had an advantage previously, right? I believe, you know, you can go over to IB.com. It's a great article about how the transition of the quarterback room has taken place over the last 2 years. You know how impressive that is now to have wide receivers come in and to have Deuce Knight on the visit, to have CJ Carr and Riley Leonard as your starting quarterback, Kenny Minchie as a back, and then 26 with Grubbs is already decided. I mean, look. This is what schools like Texas and Steve Sarkisian and USC, this is what they have in tow. Look at our wide receivers. Look at our quarterbacks that we've developed, that we've put into the NFL. Notre Dame is trending that way. Yes, we have one of the best play callers or two of the best play callers, USC and Texas. That's what they have. Guess what Notre Dame just got? Who just developed and had the Heisman winning quarterback along with two first-round wide receivers.
And the number one scoring offense in college football. And the team Absolutely. Was a top, I believe, top five passing offense last Absolutely. Year. Definitely top 10, at least top 10.
Absolutely. So you talk about evening the race out, answering the bell, answering the challenge of bringing the offensive side of the ball from a recruiting standpoint up to that level. Notre Dame has done that. And now they have something to show to young men that come in at those positions to say, you can do the same thing here. So for me, I don't fear Texas as much as I would have feared them if this was last year. If this was last year And I had that offensive staff trying to close a deal with a guy like Tanuq Hines because his dad, of course, I'm sure he fell in love with the staff. But most parents, as we've said before, they're going to love what Notre Dame has to offer. Parents are supposed to look at the big picture for their kids. It's very hard for an 18-year-old Sean. My big picture wasn't that wide. It just really wasn't, right? I had blinders on, in a sense. But when you talk about Tanuq Hines, the second visit is always tough, right? Because there's something to compare it to. That first visit is wide open. You don't know. You walk in wide-eyed and you fall in love. That second visit, like you said, Ryan, does it compare to the first visit? And can it become greater? Can they top this?
Yeah.
And, yo, I love where they sit. For me, I know a lot of people like Meadows, but I've said for a long time, the first time I watched this young man's film, I was like, oh, man, I don't know if we've had somebody like this explosive in a long time. It's like it's been a while, and that was very intriguing. He shot to the top of my board immediately. So go right ahead. Right.
You had Chris Tyree last year, but you had to move him from running back.
Exactly. Right?
Like, you know what I mean? Like the last time you can look back at it really was Will Fuller back in. I mean, like Miles Boykin and Chase Claypool were really fast on a per pound basis. I mean, they were sub 4.4s, although I would argue Miles Boykin didn't play like a guy that ran a 4.43. He was very good, but he didn't play like that. But Ryan, you talked about his time. It was 20.71 was his best time. To give some people some context. Troy Pride ran track at Notre Dame, so as a college athlete. And if you look at, let's give some context, Tanuq Hines has two sub 4.10.5s this spring. He has a 10.45 and a 10.47. He has two sub 21s. He had a 20.71, Ryan, in May, and then he ran a 20.83 in April. Now, usually I've noticed track guys tend to have their best times later in the track year. That usually is the case. Yep. He had one in early April. He ran a 20.83. Troy Pride, as a college athlete who ran a 4.4 flat and was pissed about it at the NFL scouting combine, ran a 10.5 flat at Notre Dame. And his best 200-meter time was a 21.51 was, his best 200-meter time at Notre Dame. So, and then you look at Braden Lindsay. Troy Pride in high school won the South Carolina State Championship with a 21.28. Braden Lindsay, I believe, won two 200 meters championships in college or in high school, and we know how fast he was. He won a state championship with a 21.49, right? And Micah Bell, who had a phenomenal time, who had one of the five best track times, his 200 meter dash time, I believe, was one of the 10 best. His best 200 meter track time was a 20.89. That's significantly behind. Like Tanuq has two better than that as a junior. Mm-hmm. And so this is a kid that is phenomenal track speed. But you know what though, Ryan, it's not just track speed. You see it on film. He's got a lot to learn as a route runner and all that stuff. But he usually when you have track kids, they don't always play fast, but then they also don't show the physicality. I think the point you made is very underrated about him as a player, that this is a kid who competes on the football field. He's not just a fast kid that runs by people. If you watch his quarterback, his sophomore film to me was more impressive showing his speed than his junior film because he had a better quarterback. He could actually throw the ball down the field. Like a buddy of mine was like, I don't know. I don't see the speed. I was like, well, it's because he has a quarterback. Can't throw the ball more than 25 yards down the field. He'll be about to smoke a guy, and all of a sudden he's got to stop and compete for the ball. But I think that was actually good, Ryan, because it showed that, hey, of course he can just run by high school kids. But he's had to be a kid that competes for the football over the middle on contested throws, Ryan. And I think that observation you made is the best part about it is this isn't just a track kid. This is a kid who's a track star that is a football player.
Right.
And I think that's huge. That's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I think that the separation or the determination of where he's going to play is going to be determined by that physicality, right? Like people always ask, is this guy an X? Is he a Z? Is he a slot? Like whatever. Right. And I think that those things that are determined based upon the physical profile is not only just speed and body type, it's also the physicality. Like I look at Tanuq Hines where I'm just like, I think that for sure he's a Z. Like there's no doubt about it. Get him a free release and let him just explode a field. Like fantastic. But the physicality, I could throw him in the slot at times. In a certain situation against a smaller boundary corner, like I could throw him in the boundary as well because he shows that he can counteract physicality a ton. So I think that as Notre Dame takes their steps forward offensively, I think trying to find guys that are more alignment diverse is big time at wide receiver. Like it's great to have the designation of an X versus Z versus slot. But I do think ultimately the hardest offenses to cover are teams that have wide receivers that can play all over the place, that can play a couple different spots. And I think that's what this kid can potentially bring to the table.
Ryan, you talk about that. And in the past, Notre Dame has been, you know, W, boundary, X, yep, field, slot. I mean, that's what you played. And the only time it changed is if you went like twins over, you know, tight end backside, and then the X would come over and the Z would go to the slot, whatever. I mean, it's been that. But when you break down Mike Denbrock's film, that's not at all what it is. I mean, you know, their top concept last year was a slot fade concept. I did a breakdown on it, and if you're on the message board, you can check that out. But when you watch that breakdown, Ryan, Malik Nabers is catching slot fades. Brian Thomas is catching slot fades. Mm-hmm. Is it Kyron? Is that his first name?
Kyron Lacy.
And then Chris Hilton is catching slot. Well, of course, you expect Chris Hilton to do so, but like Malik Nabers would line up in the slot in certain looks. He'd line up outside in certain looks. They put Brian Thomas in the slot for certain looks. Now, he was primarily outside, but he would move around. Yeah. You have a coach that understands this is about matchups, and there's going to be times when I want to get this guy who may normally be an X into the slot position. That's been a bit of an evolution for Mike Denbrock because I don't know if he's evolved as much as it's Brian Kelly's evolved and allowed it to kind of transition. I mean, that's a shot. I mean, just the game has changed. At Notre Dame, it was Fuller's the X, Chris Brown's the Z, Amir Carlisle's the slot. That's what it was. And we've seen him change it. At Cincinnati, they changed that. You know, they'd move Alec Pierce around a little bit. They'd move Tyler Scott and Trey Tucker. But I think that's the unique thing about a kid like Tanuk, Ryan, because if you're able to land him, and that's going to be important, they've got to close. Because it's not going to be an easy close. Like, I think they're in a great place now, but Texas isn't giving up without a fight. USC's not giving up without a fight. There's still a lot of work to be done here. But when you have a kid like this, I think one thing that helps you sell it, and Sean, this is kind of what you talked about, sometimes transition's good because you're transitioning to where now Mike Denbrock can pop on film and say, okay, this is how we're going to use you. Watch number 8 at LSU, right? I mean, is that not a somewhat, Ryan, is that not a somewhat, you know, a comp that you could say Tanuk can look at that and say, that's similar to like kind of how I played a game. 6 feet tall, fast, competes for the football. All right, move them all around. And that's the big thing, Sean, is kids, you know, you and I have talked about this in the past with Alize Mack. You know, when Alize Mack at the time was Alize Jones, and they said, well, why'd you flip from UCLA to Notre Dame? He said, well, when I went to Notre Dame, went up to UCLA, and they got on the board and they showed me all the different ways they were going to use me. When I went to Notre Dame, they popped in film and showed me how they were going to use me because they just popped in Tyler Eifert film. When you can show a kid and say, hey, look, this is what we do and this is how we do it, and we have film to show you we can do it. Mike Denbrock's got several, I mean, Will Fuller, Tyler Scott, Trey Tucker, Malik Nabers. These are all guys, Ryan, that Mike Denbrock can pop film on and say, Tanuk, this is your game and this is how I'm going to use you. You know, and whether it's Will Fuller catching a bunch of screens in 2014 or just running by everybody in 2015, he used them differently in those two seasons as Will's game evolved. And he did the same thing with Malik Nabers, moving him all around last year. So I think it's important to have that on your in your tool belt, Sean, to be able to say, I could pop in film and say, hey, watch what I did as we were the number one. You know, here's what Mike Denbrock, hey, we had the number one offense in the country last year. The two first-round picks. And, oh, by the way, I also coached the first-round pick because I was the receivers coach at Notre Dame when Will Fuller was here. And your game reminds me a lot of Will Fuller's. You know, that I mean, so you got a lot to sell there if you're Mike Denbrock. But it's not theory now, Sean. It's you have a coach that can say, I've done this multiple times. I've done this.
Yeah, we look at signing day in December and we shout and we get happy about the classes. But if you dig back and find out, what were the small things that got this kid to commit, right? Because it's the small things that really separate staffs and programs in the minds of a kid or the minds of a parent. And that's what we're talking about with Tanuk Hines. When you talk about the wide receiver position and three schools like Notre Dame, USC, and Texas, what is it about this staff? What is it about Mike Denbrock? What is it about Mike Brown, Gino Guidulli, and the rest of the offensive staff that's going to make Tanuk say, you know what? I might not be able to see it from a historical standpoint like the other two programs, but I definitely can see myself being everything that I want to be at Notre Dame. You know, so it talks about the big picture of the visit, but it's going to be those small details that you pointed out about Alize Mack in that visit, what things took place that might be small, minor details to other people, right? We can go back to the Charles Jagasaw, that small film session, that's 1.5 hour film session, stood out in his full recruitment amongst the other schools. What small detail is going to stand out for Tanuq Hines and some of these other top guys as they get ready to close this class? That's going to be vitally important for Notre Dame and the staff to be able to close these guys.
Speaking of closing and speaking of Bishop Gorman stars, there is a player that was also on campus this weekend, Ryan. Derek Meadows was on campus this weekend as well. You know, you and I have spent a lot of time doing digging on this one in recent weeks. And the thing that you're adamant about is Notre Dame was absolutely trailing. And this is from every source that we have inside the program and out, was absolutely trailing for Derek Meadows coming into this visit. And while we still have there's a big old visit in Tuscaloosa coming up here pretty soon. But Ryan, I don't know that Notre Dame could have done a better job of really knocking out of the park and putting themselves in a position where this is now a dogfight, where maybe a week ago I'd have been like, yeah, I don't see it happening. And you know, now it's like, okay, they're in it. And it was the all-around aspect to it, Ryan. Let's talk about where things are with Derek Meadows, because obviously with all the intel we got, Notre Dame actually knocked this one out of the park.
Yeah, they seem to have aligned not only with what Derek Meadows wanted to hear and answer all the questions he had and that type of stuff, having the sit-downs with coaching staff and being able to talk about his usage in the offense and how they see him fitting. And it's been the consistency about Notre Dame, which is why Derek Meadows they're even in any type of position with Derek Meadows. The other side is that I think that it also is becoming more appealing to the family. And I think that this weekend was big in that regard as well. I would just kind of phrase it like this. I feel like Notre Dame was trailing a couple schools, specifically Alabama, going into the weekend. I think that they are definitely trending upward, which is what you needed to do. Now, there's going to be a question of, did you shorten the gap between you and a couple other schools as far as narrowing the gap and getting an even playing field? Or did you take a slight lead? There are some people that believe that they took a lead this weekend, right? And there's others that I believe that think that it's more of maybe just a closing of the gap and being on more of an even playing field. Regardless, you did a great job with Derek Meadows this weekend. You now have a battle down the stretch that you can kind of look to. I think that the thing that's going to cause concern is, one, it's going to LSU and then Alabama. LSU, done a good job, but Alabama is the team that I really look at and say that is the team that I would say was the leader and maybe still is the leader. Like, again, there's some debate whether Notre Dame overtook or not. Different people have different kind of sourcing on that. But I think that Notre Dame is going to be in a battle down the stretch. Obviously, the thing that holds you, Sean, right, is that Alabama does have the last visit. I don't think the last visit always matters, but I do think that when it's a potential head-to-head battle or you took a slight lead, I do think who has the last visit can matter in that way, right? But regardless, Notre Dame did everything they could have done this weekend with Derek Meadows. They have severely cut the gap if not taken the lead heading down the stretch. The question is going to be, did you do enough to outlast that last visit to Alabama? That's the question down the stretch here.
It's amazing, right? Because we talk about transition. The transition with the staff at Washington definitely opened the door in this recruitment for Notre Dame to take steps forward, right? And at one time possibly be viewed as the leader. And then when that staff gets to Alabama, of course, Alabama jumps back in the picture, right? But Notre Dame had a chance to make an impression during that transition. However incremental you think it might be, it gave them an opportunity. And once again, now they have the opportunity at the OV to once again make an impression, make it a dog fight. All of these things matter. Like I said, great things, hard things, little things. Man, the little thing, even the losses matter. Losing out on kids, but losing closer than you did before matters each year. And then once you start winning, that tips the scale now because kids can see a little more at that particular university. We're talking about Notre Dame than they did previously because they've seen it in action. So this Derek Meadows and the official visit and how it went speaks volumes that it has become a dogfight. If it is a dogfight, that's a positive for Notre Dame's in a lot of ways moving forward for that position in further classes when we talk about 26 and 27. So once again, when you sit at the big boy table, you know, I'm not a poker player, but I admit I've watched it on ESPN a few times. You know, somebody has that 80% chance of winning, and then all of a sudden they flip the river card and everything flips, right? And that is high stakes recruiting for big time talent, man. You can get to a point where, yo, until that river card is flipped and you get to that final decision, it might look like a certain school has the bigger odds or the better odds, but yo, you have to stay in it. And Notre Dame is, that's the great thing. How long have we seen Notre Dame be out of it after official visits for top kids?
Or Sean, they were the team that was the leader flip.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many times have we seen that? I mean, for Keon Kelly, all on board, flip.
Yeah.
Ryan, I also want to push back on the notion that there's been this kind of narrative around Derek Meadows that Notre Dame has just been the leader for a long time, and then recently they faded. I mean, you were reporting on Irish Breakdown. Again, if you're a member of Irish Breakdown, you have a more realistic view of where this one was, that Washington was actually the team, and this is what Sean was speaking to, that it was actually Washington that was the team you felt was the top school for him at the time. And then that staff goes to Bama once they offered. So, like, the whole Notre Dame was the leader thing, I don't buy that. And the reason I think that's important is to, number one, understand if they don't get him, like, okay, the him to Notre Dame lock thing that people had for so long was never a real thing. But the other part too, Ryan, is if they're able to get him, and again, I share your, like, okay, cool, you made your move, but let's see if you can stay there when, you know, he goes to Tuscaloosa. And that's kind of how I felt about Nathaniel Owusu-Boateng and how excited everybody was last week. And I was like, all right, great. Let's see if it's still that way coming out of the Columbus visit. Like, that's how you know. But I also think by not understanding, to me, where this recruitment has actually been for so long, I think you might miss a little bit how hard the Notre Dame staff has worked to get here. It's almost like if they get him, it's like, well, yeah, you're the leader forever and you slipped a little bit. No, they have had to come from behind on this one for a while. Because I don't know. I think he was very turned on by two things with Notre Dame, Ryan. And you correct me if I'm wrong. Number one is obviously all the things that go with Notre Dame and the prestige and all that. Number two is Notre Dame got on him early. And there was that okay, appreciative nature of it. Well, those coaches that got on him early are gone.
Right.
You know, the OC and the receivers coach are gone. But Notre Dame had faded for a while for him. This staff has had to work from behind. That's just the reality. And I think this notion of, well, they've been the leader forever. No, that misses the boat on how hard they've had to work to get in this position with him. Sure. And now if they can hold on, that's even better. But this has been a battle. This has not been this, oh, shoot, you led and now you lost it type of scenario that I think some people are painting, right? You correct me if I'm wrong, but that's been my read. I you know, partly from talking to you, if they're able to get him, I think that's a big win. I don't think this is you held off. I think this is you were the one others were trying to hold off, and you've had to come from behind and get this one done. Am I off base on this, Ryan? You're allowed to say I am. If
well, like, no. Well, we've talked about this a million times. We've talked about this a million times at this point. I mean, quite simply, if it was Notre Dame Washington battle when Kalen DeBoer left, it was just Notre Dame for a while after that, right? Because Alabama did not offer Derek Meadows immediately until after Battle Miami, like everybody else did, right? So there was a time there where it was just Notre Dame. And the fact that he didn't pull the trigger at that point kind of tells you he wasn't like fully certain that that was the only school that he wanted to go to. There was time in between then and where we are now, and I think that I have said this, and I believe this wholeheartedly, there were other teams that were trending up. Notre Dame was at best stagnated, but I think that they were trending down slightly as well, and it's not a shot at Notre Dame. It was just look, guys, let's call it what it is. If he ends up in Alabama, it's because, one, he has a relationship with Kalen DeBoer and that staff. Two, they just had three wide receivers drafted in the top four rounds this past April, including one guy that went top 10 overall in this draft. And Alabama's had a pretty dang good track record themselves of developing wide receivers into first round picks over the last X amount of years as well. So all those things together, Alabama's very, very appealing for obvious reasons. So if Notre Dame did enough this weekend to outlast a big visit to Alabama this weekend, then that is nothing but credit and huge, huge job by this Notre Dame coaching and recruiting staff, because the chips were against them at points in this recruitment, and that would have mean that they did enough on this visit to overtake and to cement Derek Meadows.
Ryan, I don't know if you've been able to find this out, but I'm very interested because you said something that I think I would have played into if I were the Notre Dame staff. I don't know if they particularly did on the visit, but yeah, why weren't you an immediate offer when this staff that was at Washington got to Alabama? Why did they wait? I would play into, maybe not to him, but I would talk to the parents like, yo, what happened there? Why weren't you an immediate offer? Because we've been on you the entire time. Like, what changed from Washington to Alabama? Did they have interest in other guys that they thought were better? I mean, I would have approached it that
way. I'm pretty confident, Sean, that conversation has been had.
Okay.
No, because you're spot on.
Yeah.
You're spot on. I mean, yeah. Ryan's point is, and Ryan, and this is what I love about Ryan too, Sean, and this is what I appreciate about how bought in he is to what we do here, which is, guys, we're going to be honest with you. We're not going to pump sunshine up your you-know-what and then try to excuse it away when it doesn't go the way we said it. Now, there was always this, and Ryan would say this in private conversations to, I'm sure, to both of us, but it's like, if this kid really loved Notre Dame the way that people say, why doesn't he commit? Because they're literally the only game in town right now in his recruitment.
It was like Damian Shanklin.
Yeah.
Not to that degree in that reasoning, but like right. It was also
different kids, but similar thing. Right.
There were crystal balls out there for Shanklin, and everyone's just kind of like, well, what's he waiting for?
Right.
Right. Like, what's
and what was Ryan's response? Well, he doesn't like Notre Dame as much as Notre Dame likes him. And I think with Derek Meadows, there was always this desire to see what else was out there. And you know what? Good on him, because I would have rather him, if Notre Dame gets him. People say, you know, why do you not take commitments from kids who want to still take visits? This is why. Let's say that Derek Meadows would have committed to Notre Dame when nobody else was on him. Do you really think he would have not taken visits? And now you have that whole battle between you and him and the family of, no, if you're doing this, then you're not part of the – and then you have that negativity in there, and that has to be had, because you can't set rules and then not enforce them. I mean, because that sets such a horrible precedent. This is why if a kid at all wants to still take visits, you do not try to force a commitment. You don't, because of this. I'd rather never have had him than to have landed him because you were the biggest game in town and then lost him. Same with Damian Shanklin. I'm glad Damian Shanklin didn't commit, because he would have decommitted by now,
yeah,
and they would have been out of the game. And so, but if you get him, I think we need to be able to make sure we're giving this Notre Dame coaching staff the proper respect for the way that they've had to come from behind to do it. We're gonna talk more about this one, guys. I don't want to continue going down this, because we are going to dive into it even more in our next segment, where we're going to talk about confidence picks. And we're actually going to start off with this one. So before we do that, folks, do us a favor, hit that like button, hit the subscribe button. Share this podcast, not just shared on the to help us with the algorithm, but also tell your fellow Notre Dame friends and family about what we're doing here. And of course, sign up for the message board at boards.irishbreakdown.com. It's the best way, the number one way that you can support what we're doing at Irish Breakdown. So definitely check that out as well, boards.irishbreakdown.com.